The unsurpassed, penetrating and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it, we can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. So today is the 15th anniversary of the death of Reverend Master Jiyu. And we do have a memorial festival on the nearest Sunday, but today happens to be the actual day that she died. So just thinking about it today, you know, she died on it was a beautiful sunny day, actually, a little chilly, but not too bad. And she just kind of slipped away. She'd had this little cold, and she'd had colds before. We were always concerned about pneumonia, but she seemed to be okay. And was really quiet, you know. Just had it a few days. She got it on the 2nd, died on the 6th. On the evening of the 4th, she had this nosebleed that wouldn't stop, and they had to take her into the local hospital to have it cauterized. And she was laughing and joking and just reassuring people, because they were all worried, you know, when somebody's got a nosebleed that won't stop, especially when it's Reverend Master, and she's really sick, you know. But she was just reassuring people and just, you know, being herself. And the doctor looked at her and said, no, her lungs are okay, she's fine. Send her home, you know. And a couple of days later, she just slipped away quietly when we weren't looking exactly. And actually, some of the monks were with her, Reverend Master Daizui, Reverend Echo, Reverend Master Kinsey, and I think Reverend Master Hario might have been there. And I wasn't. I just popped out for lunch. She died while I was gone, you know. Came back and she'd gone. So it was very quiet, simple, no resistance. She wasn't afraid. She just upped and died, slipped away quietly, no fuss. She didn't want to be in the hospital. She didn't want a lot of fuss. So she did it just as she would have wished, you know. And, you know, every now and then I do a talk about her, and especially on her festival anniversary, and each time I try to think of, you know, what aspect shall I talk about this time? There's always, you know, her characteristics, her attributes, and I talk about different ones sometimes, and today I just thought I'd talk about her life of faith, because her whole life was a manifestation of incredible faith. And she had this childhood in England that wasn't great at all, very difficult. She lived through that. You know, she put herself through university at Durham. She didn't have any support from her family. And it was very difficult to be a female organist, which she was. And she did all these things, sort of made her way in the world. She was a teacher, a musician, just church organist, did many things. She was a lecturer at the London Buddhist Society, actually, before she even became a monk. And then finally, as we know, she went to the East, Koho Zenji, who became her master, came and did a lecture tour in England, said, oh, why don't you come to Japan and study? She took him up on it, you know. And nobody ever did that in those days. It just was not done for an English lady to go to Japan and study Zen. It's going native. It was then. And she did it. You know, all her friends thought she was bonkers, and she went anyway. And as we know, it was really hard living at Sojiji. She stuck it out, you know, had all kinds of problems. And just this incredible faith in going, knowing nobody really, and in sticking it out, you know. And of course, she had her understanding after a few months to be there, and that helped immeasurably, because that gave her the faith to continue. She knew there was that which was worth it all. Because if that hadn't happened, she might have just left and we would never have been here. But she managed to go beyond the difficulty and see that which was true and that on which one could rely and that which made it all worthwhile. And actually, all the difficulties helped her on her way immeasurably. It wasn't an entirely negative thing at all. It really helped her to have gone through all that. stuff because it really deepened her faith. Then, you know, after 7 years, when her master had died, she came to the US to do a lecture tour with no great view, just came, you know, with her little cat on her lap and, you know, her things. And, as we know, started her a small meditation group in San Francisco, and then gradually it grew, finally decided to move somewhere else, came up here, you know, saw this place, said, we'll take it. Had no money. That takes a fair bit of faith, you know. And they said, you know, as we're leaving, she said, where are we going to get the money? You know, I think they had something like 50 cents left over for a donut. Rav Masaji Show knows all these stories and remembers them all well because he was around in those early days and I wasn't. But just that incredible faith of seeing the potential in this place, seeing the potential in America, in these young American people who had no idea how to be monks, knew nothing about Buddhism, but just wanted to train with her, and how she managed to work with them, with us, and turn us into monks. Incredible, actually, to do that. Just the vision and the faith that it would take to do something like that. And, you know, going down to lecture every week at UC, at the University of California, bringing back day-old bread to feed the monks because there wasn't that much else. They were pretty poor. But just having that faith and that vision, we can do this, you know, and doing it in the teeth of all odds. Seeing the potential here, seeing what we needed to put up this hall, you know. I remember when I first came, they were still building it. They finished the building, essentially, and people were beginning to move in. And then, you know, the meditation hall, the kitchen, all the other buildings we have. To have the vision to see that and to look to the future, the guest house, the Samantabhadra Hall, and all this. To see all that in, you know, as she went along. She didn't have the whole plan before she ever came, but she could see the next step. She would put a foot out in the dark. Okay, we need a Buddha hall, you know. And then later, you know, okay, we need a new kitchen, or we need a new meditation hall. And working with all these things, just going forward in faith and bringing us all with her. It was really remarkable how much work that all took, what incredible faith and vision it took. And she had chronic illness. She had a heart condition, she had diabetes. In 1976 she almost died and had this, as we know, this deep series of visions and religious experience, and lived for another 20 years. And the faith of that, the faith of her training, carried her through the next 20 years, which is what it needed to help us get really established. I think if she had died in 1976, we probably wouldn't be here now. We needed that time for her to train us and help us to grow rooted in the Dharma. And even after that, after 1976, those last 20 years, there were a whole lot of difficulties. Her health got worse, of course. People would leave. She had this horrible trouble with the Soto Zen head office when they... she'd always been a member of the head office because she wanted to remain connected to them. And then we would be recognized as proper, as it were, not just some kind of out there organization. But we were respectable, proper, and she had the certification and the authority to teach, to run a temple, to pass on the Dharma. And she always tried to keep that clear with the Japanese head office because she'd always been a member of that. And then there was trouble and they sort of took her off the books and she had this whole struggle to get back into that. And just the difficulty of that, not for her, but for us. She didn't do all this stuff for herself. She didn't build Shasta Abbey for self-aggrandizement. She did it for us and for the Dharma. She started our order and wrote our rules, our bylaws, our procedures. It's amazing, actually, how much she managed to do. As Rav Master Jesus said, it took two younger men to replace her when she died. Rav Master dies as head of the order, and Rav Echo as the abbot. And it was just amazing what she actually managed to achieve. And this all was through the power of faith, knowing that it was worth doing and that it could be done, and just going ahead and doing it. One could not do all that without that faith that it was good to do. Good for beings, good for the Dharma, good for everyone, not for herself. Her ability to sit still in the midst of all conditions, all that stuff, I saw her over and over again, just sitting there in her den. Some awful thing would have happened, you know. And she'd be sitting there, and, you know, talking about it maybe, but just sitting still with it, not having fits or doing something extreme, just sitting still and saying, okay, what do we do now, you know. And her humor when those things would happen, you know, people would think, oh my God, and she would say, oh yes, you know, make a joke or something. Just like in the hospital, you know, when you have this nosebleed, just putting people at ease, being reassuring, comforting people just by her presence. She had faith in us, actually. She had faith in the Dharma. She had faith in, you know, the temple. She had faith in us that we would continue her legacy, that we would help keep the temple going, keep the order going. She trusted us to do it. We were what she had. She didn't choose us, we chose her. And she left us this immense legacy of Shasta Abbey, the order, and her teaching. And, of course, the order has grown greatly. We've got all these temples, meditation groups, lots of monks, you know, new monks since she died, many. Lots of lay ministers, something like 120 or 140 or something. Something like 80 monks. Zillions of us. And here is Shasta Abbey still doing what we do. Well, she's gone now, and it's up to us. It's up to us to continue to spread her teaching, to run her temples, to take care of her disciples, her grand disciples, her great grand disciples, her great great grand disciples. It's up to us and the future generations, whether monk or lay. It's up to all of us, because we all embody her teaching in our own way. And it is up to us to live that life of faith. And we're doing it. And we need to rely on our own training. We can't rely on her anymore. We can look back to her and tell stories about her and remember her and follow her example. But it's up to us. And I was thinking, what would she think of us now, you know? Would she feel that we were doing okay, that we were following her teaching, that we hadn't gone way off the rails, you know, that we were actually keeping true to the source? And I think she would. Her example as a human being, to try to follow that, her incredible compassion and kindness to beings. When somebody made a mess of things, she wouldn't just throw the rule book at them, she would try to find a way to help them. And to help them to keep training, you know. If they were a monk and they'd made a mess of things, she would try to save their religious, their monastic life. If people hurt her, she would still try to help them and spend immense amounts of time with them, helping them with their difficulty. Patience. Immense patience with all of us. Imagine the patience it would need to come to America as a monk and have all these young people running around with no clue, you know, to teach us all how to be monks. Immense patience that would take. She was always a human being, and she always made that very clear. I've said this many times. She never pretended to be some saint. She always said, I am not a saint. Made it very clear. You know, she made mistakes, try to learn from them, and she wouldn't hide them. She would, you know, there they'd be. Down to earth, very practical, commonsensical. She said, you know, common sense isn't that common, but she had actually plenty of it. She'd sit out there on the building site when people were putting up some structure, and she'd just sit out there with a hard hat and looking to make sure the ladder feet were in the, you know, on the ground, and that somebody wasn't about to drop a bucket of cement on somebody else's head, or, you know, you might want to, what's that? Just being there and kind of grounding it all, really down to earth, practical, and concerned. You know, if people were out in the cold, she'd be concerned, or working really late, she'd be there. When we were putting out the meditation hall, we were working till 10 o'clock at night, trying to, you know, get it finished, because it was right before Jukai or something, it was always like that. And she'd be there in the hall with us, you know, spraying plaster on the walls and putting in the windows and the lights and doing all this stuff, all running around doing this stuff. And she'd be right there with us late in the evening, cheering us on. It was really quite remarkable. But that incredible faith that underlay everything. She would ask for her monk's advice. She always took refuge in them. She wouldn't just say, well, I know what we need to do. We're going to do this and this and this and this. She'd say, what should we do about such and such? Especially when there was a problem. What are we going to do about this? And when there was a decision, a difficult decision to make, she would go over it and over it and ask their advice and think about it. She wouldn't just kind of dash off and do something. She would consider what's best to do here. For them, for us, for everybody. And she would not be afraid to decide things, but she would look and say, you know, think, what is best to do? She didn't just do what she wanted. She used to say, an abbot has no rights. I know what she means. She had incredible wisdom, practical wisdom to help beings with their lives, you know, and spiritual wisdom, deep wisdom of the heart that she exemplified, and that people were drawn to, and that gave comfort and helped people to develop their own faith. Faith in her, faith in the Dharma, faith in our tradition, her teaching, and so forth. She knew how to help people, you know, whether in practical ways or with deep spiritual problems. She knew what would help, and she would do it. Incredible kindness. Always taking time with people. Sometimes she was gentle, sometimes she was tough, sometimes she was both gentle and tough. And she just gave people what they needed. And I'm really grateful. I mostly got tough. That was okay. Sitting still in the midst of all conditions. You know, in a thunderstorm, she had this fear of thunder because of the Blitz being in London, or in England in the war. She wasn't in London. She was in Hastings, right on the coast. And the planes, the German bombers, would drop their bombs. If they hadn't dropped them on London, they would just drop them on the coast as they left. And Hastings got really bombed. And so, ever after, she had this fear of thunder. But when there was a thunderstorm, she would sit still, and we'd sit with her. And she didn't want to be, have a whole lot of distraction, she just wanted people to sit still with her. She would just sit. And it was a real example of sitting still in faith when there's fear in her. She knew she didn't have to worry, but she'd still be afraid, right up till she died. It's not a problem, to have that. You don't have to be perfect to help people. You don't have to have everything together. You don't have to have all the answers, no cracks, no flaws. You can have your human weaknesses, and she did. You don't have to be perfect. It's just as well. All we have to do is do our best, but to practice kindness and faith as she did is immeasurably helpful. She didn't keep everything bottled up inside, getting really kind of worried about something and then blurt it all out on somebody. She would talk about it when she was having a problem, when there was difficulties, when she was worried. She would talk about it. She didn't kind of try to preserve this kind of demeanor of being having it all together and everything is fine, I know what I'm doing. She wasn't like that at all. if you would just live day by day, as a very human person. Because the faith was much deeper than trying to be perfect or trying to look like something different. You know, just to be as she was, she knew that that was enough, that she would just be a human being, trying to do her best, helping beings with kindness and with wisdom. Sitting still. Courage in the face of difficulty. She had incredible courage. She'd have to go to Japan, to live through it, to come back, to start this place, to face her illness, you know, the difficulty she had, death, you know, everybody has to face death. But how she did it with great courage and the practice of fearlessness doesn't mean you're not afraid, it means you go on anyway and don't let it stop you. And she exemplified that, just continuing in the midst of everything, just going on. Nothing would stop her. She would say, full speed ahead and damn the torpedoes, one of our favorite expressions. She wasn't going to stop. She was just going to continue as wisely as she could and kindly, but she was not going to be daunted. And that is the practice of faith, to keep going in that way, sitting still in the midst of everything, in the midst of physical fear, in the midst of difficulty, discouragement, people, you know, sometimes turning against her. Just all kinds of things would happen. This would happen to anybody who's kind of blazing a new trail and just doing her best. Always keeping true to the Dharma. And this is the most important thing for her. She always kept true to the Dharma. She always had her eyes on the Buddha. She never let herself get pulled away. We could come with her, but she brought us with her. She didn't turn around and look back. She was going, and we could come. And this was a great attribute of hers. She was not going to be pulled off. The most important thing for her was to do her own training, that she keep true to the source, as she would put it. And along with that came everything else. But that was the most important thing, that she keep true to the source, that she do her training, keep to the precepts, do her best. And everything else came out of that. There was nothing that was more important than that for her. And because of that, she was able to steer a steady course. So we could ask ourselves, are we keeping true to her teaching? Are we keeping true to the source? Are we, you know, doing okay? We are not Reverend Master. None of us is quite like her. We're different people, and each of us is ourself. And we would not be doing her any favors by trying to be a little pretend Reverend Masters. I'd make a terrible Reverend Master, I'd make a much better Mayan. And all of us are like this. We have our own strengths, we have our own weaknesses, we have our own way of practicing the Dharma, teaching it, manifesting it, whoever we are, whether monk or layperson. Each of us is different. Each of us has our own gift to give, our own offering to make, our own way of exemplifying the Dharma. None of us is like another of us, and that's just as well. We can be inspired by her example, we can follow it, but we each have to train in our own particular way. Things change, you know. Since she died, society has changed. We have this whole computer thing now, you know. I was her secretary. The way she dealt with correspondence was every month or two, we'd get the letters out. There weren't that many generally. She'd often sort of, you know, throw them out. We'd go through the letters, she'd dictate answers to me, I'd take them away and type them, bring them back, she'd sign them. Well, now, I'm in her position, I email. And it is not a matter of doing it every month or two, it's a matter of every day, you know. And it's just different, a different way of doing things. This is a small example. She wanted to build a new meditation hall for the monks and have that meditation hall for the lay trainees. Well, where were we going to put the new meditation hall for the monks? She's buried right where we would have put it. So it would seem a better way to do it would be to build a lay meditation hall, which I think would be much better. This big meditation hall is too big, I think. It's okay, it's okay for people to sleep in, but I think we'd be better off changing that plan and building a lay meditation hall later. Not now, later. When we can, when the economy is better and all that kind of stuff. But it's an example of something that she really wanted to do, but actually no longer seemed quite how we want to do it. So we can change. We can do something different. We don't have to blindly follow something that doesn't look as though it's going to work. We can change it. And that's what she would have wished. Doing our best to keep true to the source, because these are just conditions. People's views, what's politically correct now is not what it was 20 years ago. Things change. So some of her writings, seem kind of strong now. I think, whoa, I wouldn't write that, But she did. She would do it. And things change. People change. Views change. And yet the fundamental thing does not change. And that is the important matter. And for us, to keep true to the source, to keep true to the Dharma, to keep true to our own training, to train to the very best of our ability, keeping to the precept, practicing the Dharma, keeping true to our own heart, what I know is true for myself, what I know is good for me to do. Each of us to do that, to keep true to that. And the circumstances change, the outer aspects change, and yet that is the thing that we keep coming back to. That is what she did, keeping true to what was true for her, her own integrity to the Dharma. I don't teach the way Rav Master did. I'm not like her at all. And things have changed. The flavor of the Abbey has changed. But I can remember her, and I can try to follow in her footsteps, follow her example, as we all can, to try to emulate her virtues, those great qualities that she had. We can all do our best to practice compassion and kindness to all beings. One great thing that she gave us was that Soto Zen came out of the Japanese tradition where they're really kind of tough and fierce and barking and so forth. Well, she wasn't like that. She didn't want to teach that way. She, even though she could be tough, she was actually a whole lot gentler with us than the way she had been taught. And that was really great, because now we try to do that, to teach more with more kindness and gentleness. Because in the West, you can't march around with sticks beating people. It's not going to work. And so just adapting to what will actually work for people, what will help them, but that basic kindness and compassion, courage and fearlessness, we can practice that. That courage that she had. We all have our own difficulties, our own challenges, illnesses, problems, horrible obstacles, all these kinds of things. We can face them with similar courage and fearlessness. Not that we're not afraid, but we don't let them stop us. That we make the Dharma the most important thing in our lives, keeping true, following that. We can do that, just as she did. Accepting our humanity and our mistakes, not trying to be perfect or look perfect, but just saying, okay, I'm a human being, I'm prone to this, or I've made this mistake, just to do our best, not trying to be too perfect, just doing our best with what we have, practicing kindness, practicing faith, above all, practicing faith, sitting still in the midst of all these conditions of our lives, going on, no matter what. We can do this. And we are doing it. Sometimes life is really hard. Sometimes it's all right. Sometimes it's downright joyful. To keep on going through all of it, whether it's easy, whether it's hard, whether it's just a ho-hum day, whether it's something unusual, to keep on going through all of it, to come back constantly to the Dharma, make that the foundation, living the life of faith. We can do this, and we do it. knowing that nothing lasts forever, everything changes, you know. As Rav Master would say, without fail, evil is vanquished and good prevails. When you're having a difficult time, it'll change. You know, when everything's fine, it'll change. When we're sick, it'll change, you know. Knowing that there is the unborn, undying, uncreated, as you would always talk about, and as we know for ourselves, whether we know it through and through, we know it as an idea, or we just trust that it may be so. It is indeed so. We cannot mess it up. We cannot change it. No matter what we may do, there is the unborn, undying. We are part of it. We cannot change that. It's all right. We cannot mess it up. To keep true to it, to keep coming back to it, to do our very best to keep in line true to that, whether we feel we see it or we don't, to just keep coming back to that, to follow the heart within us, to know that we dwell within that truth, no matter what happens, to keep taking refuge in that. That is what she taught us, that is what she did, and that is what we can do, all of us. And it's what we do too, it's what we are doing. Here we are, we continue her legacy, we live the life of faith. And our gratitude to her can know no bounds. Every day we recite the ancestral line, she's on the end of it, every day we show her gratitude, along with all the other ancestors and the Buddhas. Between all of them, they have passed down this Dharma to us. And she, above all, because she is a human being that many of us knew, and they learned it from a human being with their humanity. It's not some deity, it's not somebody, you know, so remote that they have to be perfect. It's a human being with her failings, her mistakes, her difficulties, her kindness, her incredible courage and faith. That is what we can follow and keep true to and always be grateful for. So that's our talk for the day. Thank you.